Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. HR Florida State Council. Advocating for the workplace on behalf of 15,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. A resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. And from the United Faculty of Florida, representing over 20,000 faculty, staff professionals, and graduate assistants at 13 universities and 14 colleges. Advocates for quality higher education for all Floridians. Online at myuff.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Supporters of Amendment 4 to restore voting rights for most Florida felons say the measure is self-enacting, but the Florida Senate has now passed a bill that would add a few conditions to that voting restoral.
The language of Amendment 4 was clear and unambiguous as observed by the Supreme Court, and it can be adequately implemented by the executive agencies that are responsible for voter registration in this state.
Also tonight, Florida lawmakers want to raise the bar for changing the state constitution.
I mean, look at the things that we've had in there, trains, pigs, you know the examples.
We'll also get the latest on the move backed by Governor DeSantis to allow the importation of Canadian prescription drugs and the expansion of a clean needle program for injection drug users. I'm Tom Flanagan. Welcome to the start of week 4 of the 2019 Florida lawmaking session. This is Capitol Report. Lawmakers in the Senate today passed a bill that would implement Amendment 4, which allows certain felons to vote. But as Blaise Ganey reports, proponents of the amendment argue it's self-enacting, and the bill passed today not only isn't needed, but they say it may also not meet constitutional muster.
When voters in Florida passed Amendment 4 in November, they gave felons who've completed their sentences and did not commit a sexual offense or murder their right to vote back. But the legislature is now going a step further in making sure those who are not supposed to be voting don't. In order to do that, St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandis says his bill focuses on three things.
One, that we define murder appropriately, that we clarify what is a felony sexual offense. But I don't think there's any ambiguity in the discussion from the court or discussion from the Dean Emeritus of Florida Law, University of Florida's Law School, Dean Mills, as he was the attorney representing the sponsors of this amendment, that fines and certain fees were incorporated within the four corners of the sentence.
The first objective listed was to define murder. The proposed legislation includes attempted murder, which Orlando Senator Randolph Bracey attempted to remove with an amendment.
I believe the language clearly says murder, and so I think attempted murder falls outside of the purview of the constitutional amendment. And so whether I agree with it, you agree with it, Chair Perry disagrees with it, I still think we are coloring outside of the lines for on this issue.
Those statements were backed by Kirk Bailey with the American Civil Liberties Union. They were one of the top supporting organizations for Amendment 4. He advised the legislature to remove the provision, including attempted murder. Brandis says he thinks attempted murder was part of the voters' intent.
I have to believe that the voters of the state of Florida recognized when they were voting for this that if an adult were to touch a child inappropriately and that child was to in such a lewd manner that they would be convicted of a sex crime that would put them on the registry, that they said that adult would not be able to vote. They would have to go back through the clemency process in order to vote. But then to also say that if that adult were to beat that child to the point where that child was in a coma but not dead, but that person should be able to get and then be charged with attempted murder and be convicted of attempted murder, but that individual should have the right to vote, to me philosophically just goes against what I believe the voters actually intended.
That goes into the issue of defining sexual offense. The bill does that by defining a felony sexual offense as a felony offense that leads to a person being registered as a sexual offender. There was little argument with that definition. The most controversial part of the issue resolves around what completion of sentence means. Brandis, citing the Florida Supreme Court hearing held to determine if the amendment could be placed on the ballot, says completion of sentence includes fees and fines.
This includes completion of the terms of probation, right?
Yes, sir. It specifically includes all matters included in the sentence, including probation and parole. So that means all matters, anything that a judge puts in a sentence.
So it would also include the full payment of any fines?
Yes, sir.
To Brandis, that testimony alone is enough to include fees and fines as a mandate for having rights restored to eligible felons. However, citing the actual constitutional amendment, Senator Bracey argues it doesn't mention anything about financial obligations.
In the written constitutional amendment, it does not say financial obligations have to be completed. So I don't think we're violating that language. But for me, I just feel like we are essentially telling these folks that they will never be able to vote.
He is right. The amendment says, quote, voting rights shall be restored upon completion of all terms of sentence, including parole or probation. The language was kept, but as multiple stops are made, it is subject to change at any moment. Before it makes it to the governor to ultimately be signed, both the Senate and House version will have to be identical. As for now, they are still apart on the definition of sexual offense. Other issues are likely to be ironed out as the bill makes its way to their prospective chambers. I'm Blaze Ganey.
Some Florida lawmakers say it's too easy to change the state's constitution. They want to raise the bar in an effort to keep what they say are policy changes out of a document that lays the groundwork for Florida's government. Regan McCarthy has that story.
Florida has a reputation for passing unusual constitutional amendments.
I mean, look at the things that we've had in there. Trains, pigs, you know the examples.
That's Ocala Republican Senator Dennis Baxley. He's behind a bill that would raise the bar for getting an amendment added to Florida's constitution.
And this resolution provides that to amend the state constitution, the increase, this is recommending an increase to the percentage to a two-thirds majority, or 66 2/3%.
Right now, in order for a proposed constitutional amendment to pass, 60% of voters must agree it's a good idea. That's a change from 2006, when only a simple majority was required for an amendment to pass. But Baxley says he still feels it's too easy to change the state's foundational document. He says part of that frustration comes from the Constitution Revision Commission, a panel that meets once every 20 years, and that Baxley says is supposed to make changes to the document's format and function.
No. We turned into a situation where we have a mini unelected legislature just running a bunch of bills on policy and budget.
But Miami Democratic Senator Jose Javier Rodriguez says lawmakers are already considering bills that would address the revision commission. One measure moving through the legislature would limit the proposals from the body to a single subject, while another would abolish the commission completely. Rodriguez says raising the threshold for an amendment to pass doesn't address that.
What would happen if we change the three-fifths threshold we have now to two-thirds, and it would have a dramatic impact on the 2018 election? The number of ballot initiatives that passed were 92%. If we lowered the threshold to, if we increased the threshold, pardon me, to two-thirds, only a third of the ballot amendments would have passed. I agree that we have a problem in terms of the process of amending our constitution. I don't think the problem is the voter threshold or the voters.
But Baxley says that's okay. He says in his view, the Constitution isn't supposed to be filled with policy items.
And I think we at least owe the voters a chance to vote on this and say, I'm fine at 60%, or no, I would like to have a higher bar so many things would not, that I do care about, but don't belong in the Constitution, wouldn't be in the Constitution. But that would be in statute, and I can lobby for it there.
Meanwhile, in the House, a similar bill is moving forward. Palm Beach Republican Representative Rick Roth is behind that bill. He says it's the job of lawmakers to protect the Constitution. And Lithia Republican Representative Mike Beltran says without the checks and balances built into the lawmaking process, voters can sometimes make mistakes.
What we have now is we have on one day 60% of the voters who don't necessarily receive all the best information on these amendments. In fact, they're heavily lobbied by these political mailers and don't necessarily have the resources to research beyond that, can alter this structural document that protects our liberties and provides the structure of our government.
If the bill passes in both chambers, the proposal would then go before voters. This time, just 60% would have to approve. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Still to come on Capitol Report, will the legislature allow Floridians to save money on their prescription drugs by ordering them from north of the border, the U.S. border?
If there's two things we know about Canadians, what they enjoy curling and they enjoy saving money at the pharmacy.
And there's a push in the Florida legislature to revive an incentive program for movie and TV production in the state.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
Legislation allowing less expensive Canadian prescription drugs to be imported for sale to Floridians is moving forward in the Senate. Ryan Daly reports those who oppose the measure have questions about vetting drugs that are coming in.
Senator Aaron Bean thinks Floridians are being gouged at the pharmacy.
Maybe you have fibromyalgia and you're taking a drug called Lyrica. We pay $6.04 per pill in Florida, but yet in Canada, they pay 63 cents.
Bean's bill, which has a House companion, passed the Senate Health Policy Committee Thursday, and a strike-all amendment filed by Bean has been adopted.
With that strike-all amendment, we will set out to ask permission to launch the program. We will get a vendor that will help quarterback the whole program. It's only for certain drugs. It's not every drug.
Bean went on to list some of the drug categories that would be excluded from what would become the Canadian Prescription Drug Importation Program.
Pain control drugs, not included. Cough suppression, not included. Hormone replacement. Any type of biological products, not included. If it's non-oral, meaning it's injected, it's not included.
The Jacksonville Republican says when it comes to the safety of Canadian imported drugs, Florida consumers can trust that they will be vetted by Health Canada, what he calls the country's equivalent of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. But Don Bell, who spoke on behalf of the Partnership for Safe Medicines, is more than skeptical. Bell says he has more than three decades of law enforcement experience in Canada and was formerly the Director of Intelligence for the Canada Border Safety Agency.
The bill will create a significant loophole that smugglers will exploit to traffic counterfeit medicine into Florida. Criminals will attempt to reap significant illicit profits from such a loophole. This will significantly increase the black market for counterfeit prescription drugs and endanger Florida consumers.
Beyond what he says is a loophole, Bell asserts Canadian officials aren't in a position to make guarantees.
Canadian authorities and law enforcement are neither resourced nor structured to guarantee the safety of transnational drug shipments.
Jeff Johnson, state director for the Florida American Association of Retired Persons, thinks the bill would be a victory for Floridians who rely on medication.
As Senator Bean said in his open, we hear from AARP members all the time who are struggling to pay the high cost of medicines. A lot of them have to make choices about rent or medicine, food or medicine, or cutting back doses, and that has a serious effect on their health. We believe this bill would create a safe pathway for them to access cheaper drugs from Canada and make it possible for them to maintain their health as well as paying their other major expenses.
The Senate bill will next head to the Appropriations Subcommittee on Health and Human Services. Even if the legislation passes, Bean says the program will need a stamp of approval from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ryan Daly.
There's a proposal in the state legislature that could make it easier for injection drug users to trade dirty needles for fresh ones, preventing the spread of HIV and hepatitis C. A trial project in Miami-Dade County is the only legal needle exchange in Florida. This bill would let the other counties create something similar. WLRN Sammy Mack has been following the needle exchange and the people who use it.
There's a spot along 11th Street in Overtown in Miami that's surrounded by overpasses. And this time last year, a guy with heavy black arrows tattooed on his arms showed up there pretty regularly.
I'm Arrow.
Nice to meet you.
Pleasure.
Arrow was a heroin user, and he came to this spot a couple of times a week to swap his used needles for clean ones at a mobile needle exchange. Big green van, really. We're not using his full name because the program keeps participants anonymous.
Now I can shoot with a clean needle every time.
Florida continues to have some of the highest new HIV rates in the country, in the middle of an opioid epidemic. Miami's needle exchange is the model for a proposed new law that could jumpstart needle exchanges across the state. When we first met, Errol was sleeping under an overpass. He was wiry and a little twitchy. He told me that every addict he knew always put the drugs first. Clean needles were an afterthought.
If I didn't have any of my own, I had to try to clean out the ones that I had. Every once in a while, I did use someone else's, and that was a thrill ride, you know, wondering whether or not I was going to catch anything.
In the 3 years it's been around, the exchange has pulled 250,000 used needles out of circulation. It hands out Narcan, too, the drug that reverses opioid overdoses. According to the exchange, that piece of the program has prevented 1,000 and some overdoses. The program also offers testing for HIV and Hep C. That's how Arrow knew he was negative. It connects people to medical care and drug rehab. Arrow wasn't so interested in that part.
I'm not a recovering addict. I don't go to them damn meetings.
Alrighty. Now we will take up Bill 366 on infectious disease elimination.
Bill 366 would allow all Florida counties to authorize more needle exchanges like the one in Miami. The bill's sponsor, State Senator Oscar Brainin from Miami Gardens.
We have a few things that work against us when we try to do something like a needle exchange. The first thing is it is a outside-of-the-box idea. It just sounds different.
Last year, a similar bill sailed through its committees but never got scheduled for a final vote in the House. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, needle exchanges do prevent the spread of viruses in injection drug users. But it wasn't legal to operate exchanges in Florida until 2016. That's when the legislature gave Miami-Dade County special dispensation to try it for 5 years. It was a huge win for Dr. Hansel Tooks. He first brought the needle exchange proposal to Tallahassee as a med student 6 years ago. Tooks is now head of the Idea Exchange.
We have made it so easy for people to get into HIV care now.
Counties would have to opt in. It's up to them to sign off on any needle exchange, and the proposal bans the use of any state funds for needles.
Yeah, I'm here to see Dr. Tooks.
It's almost a year before I see Arrow again. If it weren't for the tattoos running down his arms, I don't think I would have recognized him at first. Clear skin, a little paunch around his midsection. He looked healthier.
How have you been?
Wonderful.
Yeah?
Yeah.
He had an appointment with Dr. Tooks.
Still taking Biktarvy?
He looks better, but it's been a rough year for Arrow.
Daily basis, regimentally.
Last May, his girlfriend died from a heart infection.
Deep breath?
That can happen to people who inject drugs.
Exhale.
And after that, Arrow says he overdosed.
Deep breath?
On purpose.
Exhale.
Narcan Deep from the breath. Needle exchange brought him back.
Exhale.
He kept using.
Deep
and
breath.
Sometimes he used other Exhale. People's needles.
How much are you smoking now?
And then he tested positive for HIV and Hep C. Tooks and his colleagues threw Arrow one more life raft. They got him an inpatient drug treatment bed.
I've slowed down some.
At the appointment, a string of keychains from Narcotics Anonymous clicked away at his waist.
My chain of sobriety. I got 30 days, 60 days, and 90-day chips.
His HIV is under control, and medication cured his Hep C. Now, he's focused on staying sober, one day at a time. And he's starting to want things, like a construction job. Even if the needle exchange bill passes, not every person who uses the program will necessarily get this far. But folks supporting it hope that more people will at least have a chance. For Health News Florida, I'm Sammy Mack in Miami.
A measure establishing a state hemp industry is making its way through the Florida Senate. Sean Mulcahy reports the measure received critical backing from the Agriculture Committee today.
The bill, brought by Fleming Island Republican Senator Rob Bradley, previously got the nod from the Industry, Innovation, and Technology Committee. It was ambiguous in its original form, only authorizing the state agriculture department to develop rules for a hemp program. After that committee, Bradley said he would work with advocates and the department to clarify.
This is a beginning point to get the discussion going, and I think there's going to be a lot of given take and discussions between Commissioner Freed's office, our fellow legislators in the House on it. And I think the final product will probably look different than what you saw today.
Bradley lived up to his word, offering a robust 10-page amendment clarifying a number of questions raised during its first stop. It provides basic registration and licensing requirements for hemp growers and manufacturers, and it leaves it up to the Agriculture Department and the Departments of Business Regulation and Health to draft rules. Most importantly, for a number of advocates and state officials alike, it legalizes hemp derivative CBD. Unlike marijuana, CBD doesn't give a high, and it's often used for pain relief and muscle relaxation. Right now, CBD is in a legal gray area, with officials like Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried saying it's illegal, despite appearing on the shelves of health food stores, gas stations, and smoke shops across the state. Another question, raised at its previous committee stop, is about the scope of production. Should hemp be available solely on an industrial scale, or can people grow it at home? That's a question Boca Raton Democratic Senator Kevin Rader had for Bradley.
Will individuals be able to grow hemp for personal use?
No. And if we were to do that, we would not be consistent with the opportunities given to us by the Farm Bill.
So hemp isn't a controlled substance. Why not just allow individuals to grow it then?
Well, that was something that I would suggest that you take up with our friends in Congress.
Bradley notes hemp is a unique product, but he wants to make it as available as possible.
This is not a reflection of the medical marijuana system. That is a medicine with a controlled substance, and this is different. But it's also not the same as growing apples or oranges either.
This includes transporting hemp across state lines and even internationally. Hemp products would also get the Fresh from Florida stamp of approval, like oranges grown in the state, and the quality control regulations that accompany it. Yet Florida Cannabis Action Network Executive Director Jody James takes issue with a provision requiring farmers to agree in advance to law enforcement searches. That's included as a requirement to get a grow license.
One of the concerns that we have with this bill comes on line 80 through 87, which is where every farmer waives their right to the Fourth Amendment. Basically, if you pass this bill the way it is, you are telling farmers who participate in this program and anyone who participates in this program that they should allow law enforcement on their property at any time.
James says she understands the concern for keeping high THC products like marijuana off the market. THC is the ingredient that produces a high. CBD contains less than 0.3% THC. But James says this could lead to confusion.
If you guys don't understand the difference and there's not a line item allocating what the difference is going to be, how do you expect the Leon County Sheriff to know the difference?
Also on the committee's docket was a linked bill that caps the application fee for a hemp license at $500. The Agriculture Department can waive the fee, and the funds raised will go to the Plant Industry Trust Fund. The 2018 federal Farm Bill decriminalized hemp, but it's still illegal under state law. A similar bill in the House is scheduled to be heard by its first committee Tuesday. I'm Sean Mulcahy.
As the midpoint of this year's Florida lawmaking session comes into view, the pace is starting to pick up at the Capitol, and Gina Jordan has a preview.
Here's what's coming up tomorrow in the Florida legislature. The House is working to eradicate a form of modern slavery. A bill would require that public lodging managers and employees be trained to recognize and report human trafficking to law enforcement. A Miami-Dade needle exchange pilot program may be expanded to other areas. It's designed to help prevent the spread of HIV and other diseases by intravenous drug users. A series of changes may be coming to the higher education system. One proposal would require universities to survey faculty members and students about their personal viewpoints as a way to measure diversity of opinions on campuses. And physician assistants and advanced practice registered nurses may soon be allowed to work independently of doctors. In the Senate, additional money may be allocated to Northwest Florida school districts that lost some enrollment because students were displaced by Hurricane Michael. A proposed ban on the controversial oil and gas drilling technique known as fracking goes before committees in both chambers. Environmentalists have raised concerns, saying the bills leave open the possibility of a drilling technique that uses many of the same chemicals as fracking. That's some of what's happening tomorrow in the Florida legislature. I'm Gina Jordan.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, since Florida essentially stripped an incentive program from the state's Film Commission, the state has seen fewer movie and TV productions within its borders. Now, as we hear from Gabrielle Bolden, advocates for those productions are trying to revive Florida's incentive programs.
Some lawmakers want to revive film and TV industry productions in the Sunshine State. They say these industries create more high-paying jobs and increase tourism. The Florida Office of Film and Entertainment wants to use a combination of public and private sector money to continue national and international marketing of the state. Film Florida Executive Director John Lux says a lack of public money is causing productions to leave.
Right now, the private sector is doing everything they possibly can to help bring projects here. But ultimately, those efforts have a hard time competing with the vastness of full state programs that they get in other states.
Lex says the main reason Florida isn't attracting the film industry is because it's not economically appealing.
We're the only state in the Southeast and one of only 17 states in America that don't offer some sort of economic program to entice film and television projects. And while we have wonderful weather and locations and infrastructure and history, at a certain point, it's a value proposition.
The Florida Senate is moving forward with a resolution in support of Florida's film industry. Senator Joe Grutter says the residual value lasts long after filming is over and would serve as a marketing opportunity.
We have some of the best film schools across the state. You mentioned them, Full Sail, Florida State, Ringling College. We have production facilities that are sitting idle, empty, that used to be full. We have a couple in my area.
I just think that it's about time, Florida, don't let your jobs go away to another state. You're always comparing what Georgia does or Texas or whatever. We can make the money. We can produce. You've been producing for years.
That's Democratic Senate Victor Torres. The state has allowed tax incentives for companies who are producing shows and movies in Florida, but a large portion of those incentives ended 3 years ago. According to the state, during the 2017 to 2018 fiscal year, 954 companies signed up for a tax exemption. That created at least 32,000 Florida jobs, and the state gained $1 billion in funding. I'm Gabrielle Bolden.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Thanks also to Casey Chapter and Gabrielle Bolden. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Be sure to join us again every weeknight throughout the Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. HR Florida State Council. Advocating for the workplace on behalf of 15,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. A resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. And from the United Faculty of Florida, representing over 20,000 faculty and graduate assistants at 13 universities and 14 colleges, working to encourage lawmakers to fund Florida's future through support of public education. Online at myuff.org.